Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast in what is another preview special where we go to speak to the Sunderland managers, and we do this little thing before it where we talk amongst ourselves about that particular era, about that particular manager.
We've done it a load of times.
They're in the pipeline, Gareth, you know this.
Yeah, they are heavily pipelined.
We're heavy pipelined at the moment. So we looked at Dennis Smith first. It was going to be like Sunderland managers in the 90s particularly, but then we thought, well, Dennis Smith obviously was in charge as the 90s come in as a decade. Yeah. So we started with him, which was logical anyway, because he was a manager when I was when I started supporting Sunderland, and it's all about me, obviously. So he was the first one. Malcolm Crosby was the next manager, and we're going to talk tonight, myself, Stephen Goldsmith, and Gareth Barker, and podcast extraordinaire Andy Dawson is back with us.
Hello there. Thanks for having us.
Podcasting to your heart's content today well, as well. I think
you've got us in because I'm basically the oldest person you know that knows what a podcast is. But I'm happy to be here.
That's not a bad summary. That works for us. And we're going to just talk about our own memories as well. I get another reason you're a bit old, Andy, so you're in the alcohol stage.
Yeah, you just get me into like list names of pubs that people, all the listeners might remember. I forgot about that one.
So we discussed Dennis Smith, and it was a very interesting time to be a Sunderland fan because he came when the club was on its arse. In the third division, he got us promoted. A couple of seasons later, he got us promoted via the playoffs, beating Newcastle, of course, up to the old Division 1, which is the Premier League now, top division. And then he got relegated, sold Marco Gabbiadini to try and rebuild a team. He brought in John Byrne, Don Goodman, Anton Rogan. And then he didn't last much longer after that, Dennis, because we were beaten 3-0 by Oxford a couple of days before New Year's Day in 1992, and he was sacked. Did you know much about Malcolm Crosby at this time?
I had very little knowledge of Malcolm Crosby, to be honest, because it had been Dennis Smith and Viv Busby all the way before then. You know, they were the dream team, and for whatever reason, you know, the split had happened, Viv had moved on, and I think in the Dennis podcast he said that he wanted to just shake things up on the training ground and behind the scenes. So Malcolm Crosby kind of came to the forefront, and it was just good timing really for Malcolm, because he was the one that turned to as a caretaker manager when Dennis did get the sack. To be fair, I did think it was quite harsh on Smith to be, you know, to be given that money to spend to try and rebuild the team, because the form had been quite hit and miss during that season after we'd been relegated. You know, I thought we might have challenged for promotion a bit, especially with Gabbiadini in the team. It didn't happen, and then it kind of rebooted a little bit and overhaul it with Goodman and Byrne. I think it was a shame that he didn't really get a fair crack of the whip.
Did the fans turn on him, Andy?
Well, Smith, I was going to games, but I wouldn't be able to remember it being like Smith out all that much. I think there was a little bit of bewilderment when he did get the sack. I think the general feeling was that he deserved a bit longer. But, you know, it's a results business and all that kind of thing. And Bob Murray wielded the axe, and Martin Crosby got the job just as the cup run began, really, with the third round against Port Vale.
Because, like we say, like my memory is very much he was a youth team manager. Nobody really knew about the youth team managers much. And then suddenly he was, you know, very small period of being number two. And then he was in the manager's job, wasn't he? And I don't think anybody would have thought at that time he would get the job on a permanent basis or last longer than the first few games. People who were linked with the job at the time. Joe Jordan was one of the favourites. Neil Warnock, who, of course, as even our younger listeners know who Neil Warnock is, managing in the Premier League today. He'd done a similar job to Dennis Smith, and he took Notts County from the third tier to the top tier.
I mean, I read that there was some kind of agreement that when Sunderland did go out with a cup, that Warnock would then come in, and the Crosby was being given a crack of the whip while the cup run happened. But obviously, we got all the way at the final, so that, you know, Murray's hands were tied a little bit with that.
Yeah, Phil Neal was the other name.
Brilliant.
Which, Gareth's pulling a face. What's your memory, or what do you associate with Phil Neal? Because I know what you're going to say, so
listeners
to hear it, yeah.
Yeah, what do you call it, the documentary with Graham Taylor?
Do I not like that? Yeah.
The Impossible Job, it was called, the documentary.
It was, yeah.
He was made, apparently he wasn't anything like that. Apparently he was quite good, but obviously in that documentary he was made a little bit of an idiot. And then obviously he was taken off quite brilliantly by Bradley Walsh in the Mike Bassett film.
Well, basically, he just repeated everything the manager said.
I mean, McMenemy was on that bench as well, let's not forget, who had been, obviously, Sunderland before Dennis Smith. So,
and then he didn't have another job after that, did he?
He
ended up being involved with England a few years later.
It's funny how managers just drop off the face of a cliff, isn't it?
I remember that my dad wanted Neil Warnock to have the job. I remember that quite clearly.
Interesting story about Neil Warnock in the podcast, so look out for that one.
From Malcolm, yes.
The
game that really kick-started things, I mean, he won his first four games, which helps, because the fans were on his side straight away then. Because as you said, we'd been relegated. We saw in the last season for Sunderland in the 17-18 season, didn't we, where a side got relegated and you thought they would do better than they did.
Yeah.
So then suddenly he got them performing and got them playing well. We won 3-0 in the FA Cup third round, which was his second game, I think. And that game stands out to me for a couple of reasons. One, because I knew that he brought Brian Atkinson in from the youth team when more Sunderland fans hadn't seen him involved.
Yeah.
And he scored in that game and played really well. But mainly because I missed the game because I'd been bought a ticket for the pantomime at Sunderland in the December, which... This is one of the things, you know, like how you think you remember something one way, and then when you actually do your research and check it out, it's not what you thought. Because I would have always told people, yeah, I missed that game and I went to the pantomime to watch Shadow from the Gladiators in Aladdin. But actually, I looked and it wasn't. It was Snow White and Mark Little from Neighbours, who was Joe Mangle.
I'll tell you exactly where I was during the 1992 FA Cup final.
Right. Jumping the gun a little bit, but okay.
Dickens play area.
So, I'm sure you said that about the 1990.
No, I was in Dickens Player.
It was his cup final tradition.
I was very nervous kid, you know. I had to go and distract myself with slides and balls, and that was quite good.
God. It's interesting because I was 11, and I can remember most things about watching Sunderland at that time. And I don't know if it's because we got the final, where I can remember the little details, but honestly, I can remember the cup draw for the third round, watching it in my brother's bedroom after Match of the Day, and us getting Port Vale. I don't know why that sticks in my mind, but I can. I remember being gutted that I missed it, but it was like a kind of an arrangement where my auntie's work got all these tickets, and my mum was like, you will go. And I remember being good because I missed it and we won 3-0. And that was where it all started for Malcolm. It's not the FA Cup. It's hard to think of him without thinking of the FA Cup.
Yeah, that's his whole story is, you know, framed by that. But it felt like getting to Wembley was almost inevitable, weirdly. Even though we were just second division team, we weren't doing that well. When you get to the fifth round and we had the away tie at West Ham, and I remember we were thinking, well, we knew we had Chelsea next if we won that one.
Right.
But we knew we had Chelsea away. And I think the thinking was, well, if we can get them back to Rock Park, we can beat them. Mm. And it kind of just, it was almost written in the stars, and the way that it played out didn't really come as a surprise, but the momentum was incredible and the sort of the emotion among the fans and everything. Yeah. Just like one of them snowball things, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he won five out of his first six games as manager, which, I mean, if you think about a manager coming in and having that impact, I can't remember. You know, maybe when Roy Keane got his feet under the table,
So, I mean, there's parallels, a few parallels there with Frazier, I guess, in, you know, in our time.
Yeah.
You know, taking on that job, and
I don't think the power of an FA Cup would save a manager now like it did then. So, you know, if we get a caretaker manager now and Sunderland went on a cup run and they got the quarterfinals, I don't think an owner would think twice about replacing that caretaker manager with who he wanted. the FA Cup meant it was a lot different then, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it meant so
yeah.
much more.
Well, I don't know, because if it was still a second division team that was on that run, then perhaps they would bear with him and give him the benefit of the doubt and let him go with it. But there was never any doubt about replacing him with anybody. It was kind of, this was, again, I say destined, but it was all tied in together that Malcolm, you know, local fella, took the job, unlikely manager, and he wasn't highly polished in front of the media and all this kind of thing. He came across as one of us sort of thing. You know, he was a bit awkward, a bit uncomfortable in front of the cameras.
I think it helped he was from the area, from South Shields, Sunderland fan.
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, I always buys you a bit extra time and a bit of, you know, a bit of goodwill from the fans when that's the case.
Even if Phil Brown was to get the job?
Hypotheticals there. I mean, let's hope that we're never in a situation going forward where Phil Brown is the Sunderland manager.
He was touted, wasn't he, a year ago when we got Grayson?
Yeah, that was a long time ago, a year ago. Yeah, a lot of things have changed since then.
Just looking at my notes here, Sophie from Home and Away was the other person who was in the Empire that year.
Oh.
So, I can't remember that.
Was that Rebecca Emmalogaloo?
It was a sort of Greek or Cypriot settlement,
I remember. I was 19 that year.
Oh, there you go. There you go. See, very different memories. You mentioned the West Ham game there. Before that, we went, and just for our younger listeners who might not be aware of the 92 Cup final run, we beat Port Vale quite convincingly 3-0 at Roker Park. Then we went to Oxford just a couple of weeks after they turned us over 3-0, where Dennis Smith lost his job and we won 3-2. We were winning 3-0 and they pulled a couple back late on, which was never a nice place to go. All that was at the Manor Ground. Oxford Raw was one of those teams. They were kind of like Wimbledon of that division, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
The old Wimbledon where it was a tough place to go down. Yeah. And it was a night game, that one, because the weekend one was postponed. By the time West Ham come round 5, we draw 1-1 at home. John Byrne scores, obviously. Was John Byrne ever close to you in... as a possibility of being a replacement for Gabby Deeney? Because this was somebody who was so popular amongst the Sunderland fans, Gabby Deeney, wasn't he?
He was, and I don't know if he could ever really replace Gabby Deeney because of the type of player that he was. But you've got to remember as well that Don Goodman came into the club but was cup-tied, so that there was always that sort of disjointed thing. There wasn't any coherence in the team selection. You know, a cup match would come along, Goodman couldn't play because he played in an earlier round, so John Byrne, the focus was always on him to get the goals, and luckily he did. I mean, he was a fantastic player for us at the time. I don't remember him scoring that regularly in the league, but then the league form still continued to be pretty poor as the season went on. It wasn't as if the entire club got swept up in this cup run and the league form picked up as well and everything was brilliant, because by the time you'd get to the end of the season, it was... you know, it was fairly hairy, and we had a run of defeats, and we just kind of saved ourselves towards the end of the season. But it was almost like we had two separate seasons going on. You had that team that had Goodman in, and then the team where Goodman wasn't playing, which was the cup team, and that was the team that was you know, doing the business.
West Ham away was we won 3-2. We went 2-0 up. West Ham pulled it back to 2-2.
Yeah,
And then David Rush scored.
That's right, yeah.
Quite later on. What I remember about David Rush's celebration was he used to do this weird celebration after he scored where I don't even know how to describe it. Just maybe go on YouTube and have a look at David Rush scoring for something. Where this thing where he was quite casual, trying to like almost like pause in the crowd. And he started to do that. And then I think the enormity of the goal he just scored kicked in. Yeah. And then he ran off sort of celebrating like a nutter after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there were quite a few young lads in the team then, weren't there? Rush was about, Brady was around.
Yeah.
Brian Atkinson
and
was the big
Atkinson
one.
And Atkinson had come in as well, yeah.
He was the big one, Atkinson, wasn't he? So you said you knew we had Chelsea in the next round. Obviously, I wouldn't have remembered that in detail. What I can remember is the Chelsea game was on Sky, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Both games. And this was when Sky was, you know, it was a novelty to be on Sky.
It was in its infancy, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Sky,
you're like, we're on Sky, let's all go around the uncle's house who could afford Sky. Exactly, like, he's the one in the family who's got Sky and none of the rest of us did.
I used to get my uncle on Sky.
It's always somebody's uncle who's got Sky.
He used to tape The Simpsons for us on Sky One, and he'd tape the wrestling. So I'd have to go around and get the tape and then like watch The Simpsons and the wrestling. And that was yeah, that was my uncle had Sky as well. Never went round to watch it, like.
No, I remember going round, and it was one of those where, like, in school tomorrow, your mum's not happy about it, but your dad's, like, fighting your corner, yeah, kind of thing. Oh, it'll be all right, we'll go around. And John Byrne equalised quite late on the Stamford Bridge. We were losing 1-0.
Yeah.
Ian Porterfield was right. Manager of Chelsea at the time, and of course, scored the winning goal for Sunderland in the 73 Cup final.
Yep.
So a nice little bit of a link there for that. In terms of the replay, where does that stand for you and as favourite all-time games?
It was one of them totally magical nights, but unfortunately I wasn't actually there.
Oh, were you?
I was in the Ivy House watching it on Sky. Because
these are the stories we want to hear more of, Andy, Ivy House stories and stuff.
It was, I said in the last episode, at the time I was working in Our Price, the record shop. So I worked most Saturdays, so I didn't get as many of the games as I would like to, because it's quite hard to get a Saturday off when you're at the shop, busiest day of the week and all that. So when I did go, I would usually go by myself, because my mates at the time weren't that bothered about the football. So I was kind of outvoted a bit with the Chelsea one. It was kind of like, well, I could go on my own, or we could go to the pub and it'll be bouncing and, you know, we'll have a few beers and everything. So I opted for that. And when Armstrong scored the winning goal, the roof just came off the pub. It was amazing.
Glorious times. Why were you working on Saturday? Were you studying or did you just...
No, I was working full time in the shop, so you had to work Saturdays because it was the busiest day, and you'd have a day off during the week, and getting a Saturday off was the holy grail.
I remember you telling a story about Gary Bennett coming in Our Price when you were on TalkSport once. If you want to relay that story.
Yeah, Gary Bennett came in. It was the morning after Sunderland had drawn 1-1 home against Grimsby, a midweek game. It had been a dire performance. This would have been about 93, 94, I think.
Did Richard Ord score like a last minute equaliser?
Oh yeah, well, I can't even remember. It was so mind numbing. I can't remember. It might have been. Let's say yes. So Gary came in. He came in occasionally into the shop, and he came in, and I just kind of said, he hadn't actually been playing the night before. He'd been injured, I think. And I just said, "Were you at the match last night, Gary?" He says, "Oh yeah, I was there." Yeah, I says, "Left a lot to be desired, didn't it?" And he went, "We do our best." And I thought,
that
God.
Sounds like something exactly like Ben Owens. Yeah.
Oh God, he's going to come for us, going to leap over the counter and strangle us or something.
What kind of music did he used to buy?
He was into his soul, I think, Gary. Yeah.
His daughter's a very famous music producer now.
Mm.
Is she?
She does Jess Glynn songs.
Really?
Award-winning.
Wow, really good. Yeah. Did not know that.
Yeah, I think she was in that latest video as well.
Fantastic.
Mm. So there you go. I don't know why, what people want to do with that information.
Maybe he was inspired by you, Andy. Maybe he saw you in Our Price and thought, yes, that's the job for my daughter.
Gary
music.
Bennett links now.
Yeah.
His granddaughter's in my daughter's class as well at school.
All right.
I see him in the schoolyard quite regularly. So there you go.
Who cares?
Have you got a Gary Bennett link?
No, not really, no.
Apart from being pictured talking to him when you were at a Bournemouth game once.
I just talked to him loads of times.
Yeah, no, but it was on the telly, wasn't it?
If you remember. Yeah, it was on the telly, on the foreign telly.
My son's at the same school as Max Power's son at the minute, and the kids have all been told to leave Max Power's son alone because they're always hassling him. Asking him what it's like to be Max Power's son.
Pretty cool. I mean, isn't he called Max as well?
Is he? Max Jr.
I think he's called Max as well.
It would make sense.
Max Power Jr. is a great name, isn't it?
Isn't Max Power's dad called Max as well? Or is that something I've imagined?
I don't know. I don't know because he said his dad wound him up that he was named after the Simpsons character. Right. Because
it would be good if his dad was as well, because then the kid would be Max Power III.
Yeah.
And that's a name.
That is a name.
It absolutely is a name. Where were we in the cup run? Gordon Armstrong.
Didn't someone come in Our Price? Was it Dennis who went in Our Price?
It was Malcolm Crosby.
It was Malcolm.
We'll get to that. That was before the semi final.
All right, there you go.
Okay, I've gone too early.
Like tell us you were in Dickens for the final. But that, you know, I mean, I was at that game and I can remember that goal. Although, again, I'm surprised how close it is when I watch it back on the replay, because in my mind it was from the halfway line. that Gordon Armstrong header. But that's a really iconic goal as far as Walker Park
definitely.
Goes.
I mean, he leapt like a salmon, didn't he? The greatest thing Gordon Armstrong ever did for us, that, I think.
Did you go to the semi-final then?
I didn't get to the semi-final either. No. Was that a Sunday, the semi-final?
Yes.
I don't know. It was. Again, it probably would have just been...
Because Portsmouth and Liverpool played the day before.
Yeah. I can't imagine it wouldn't have been that hard to get... Well, it might have been hard to get tickets for, I'm not sure.
It was one of the time, what you had to, somebody in the family, probably an uncle, the one who had Sky, would go and have to camp out at Roger Park. Yeah. And I can remember that. It was my uncle, actually. I think it was the same one as well.
Did he have one of those like little tellies?
Well, I don't know about that. I can't remember. But I remember they would do shifts.
Mm-hmm.
So they were there like 24 hours before the ticket office opened. One person would set the tent up. And then another one would go and take over.
Yeah.
And then they would do that, and there would be four of them through the course of it, and then obviously they'd get in the queue for the ticket office, and then they would come away with the tickets, and that's what you did. But you didn't need vouchers or anything for the semi-final. It was just a literally free case for all.
I had nobody within the family that would have been prepared to do that for us, and obviously logistically I was selling records to Gary Bennett, so that was a non-starter. But again, John Byrne again. You know, every round, scored in the semi-final as well. But yeah, Martin Crosby came in. I was working in the Metro Centre at Price, and Martin Crosby came in a few days before the semi-final, and he bought a video, and I'd served him, and I asked him, you know, wished him luck for the semi-final and everything. And he said that the video was to watch on the team bus on the way to Hillsborough for the semi-final. And I've been racking my brains as to what it was, and I think it might have been Terminator 2.
Right.
I should have retained this information, really, because it was quite a memorable
we should have asked him
moment, you know.
Yeah, I think Kevin Ball tells a story that they watched Naked Gun, I think, at some
point. Right.
Might not have been the bus on the way down. We'll ask him a bit, because we'll speak to him soon.
It's a great film.
I don't remember.
Because he tells a story that... they thought all the Omens were with us, and they watched Naked Gun, and then when they got to London, they saw, what was the guy called?
Leslie Nielsen.
No, I think it's a Liam Neeson. They saw Leslie Nielsen.
Wasn't O.J. Simpson in Naked Gun?
He was.
Before the whole...
The whole gun thing
that he did. Didn't do. Did you listen, OJ?
He's not going to sue you, don't worry.
He's in prison, isn't he?
Bigger fish to fry.
No, he's in prison, isn't he?
He's out now, I think.
Is he?
Yeah.
He'd be back in by now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How do you remember the nostalgia around that, Andy? Because a lot of people, I hear a lot of people say I wasn't the same as 73, that cup final run. I mean, I know we lost in the final, but it didn't feel the same and stuff. Now, I was 11-year-old, so I was crazy for it. Mm-hmm. And my memories are that the town was red and white.
Yeah.
The whole cup run, and everybody got bang into it.
Yeah, totally. That's how I remember it as well. Maybe people's memories are a bit tainted because of the fact we didn't win it. And, you know, the final was a bit of a damp squib. There's none of that associated glory with 73. But, yeah, I remember all the shops just had red and white stuff in all the windows and all that kind of thing. And I watched the final in Livingston's pub, which is now the ISIS.
Yeah.
They unfortunately named ISIS pub.
We've done live podcasts in there.
Right. And it was not as genteel then as it is now.
Yeah, Livy's, the old Livy's.
Livy's, yeah. Mm. So I watched it in there because one of my mates used to work in there, so we drank in there quite regularly. But that was all festooned with, you know, all red and white and everything, and the place was just ram-packed.
Was this for the final?
For the final, yeah.
What about the semi-final?
I think I watched that in the house.
Would have been an early Sunday, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, was it?
I'm not totally sure about that.
I remember.
Great family memory for me driving home from Sheffield that day, mm-hmm. in the car with, actually, it was, it's a lad who works with Frankie Francis, actually, the Amazing Radio, and I was in the car with him and my uncle, one of my uncles, and I just remember his dad and my uncle just sort of singing to every song that came on the radio the whole way home.
Yeah.
And everybody was just so happy you know, we'd got to the cup final because it just seemed unbelievable at the time.
But it to me, it felt like there was never any doubt we were going to win that semi-final. Like I said, it felt as if the whole thing had snowballed. There was an inevitability about it, tied in with the fact we had Martin Crosby as the manager, and it just... Norwich, I didn't think that we were going to lose that one.
A decent team, Norwich, then.
Yeah, they were, yeah, absolutely. But I think the thinking was, well, we've beat West Ham, we've beat Chelsea, so there's nothing to fear from Norwich.
Yeah, they'd been in the European Cup and all that, hadn't they?
Season
before.
The season after that, they nearly won the league, was when they really kicked on, yeah. So it might be a couple of years after
Bayern
that.
Munich.
I think that was a couple of years after, because it was a result of... That was the start of that Norwich team. Mike Walker put together. It was quite a good young team. And Chris Sutton and everybody and Will Fox. I couldn't get a ticket for the final, which I was fuming about, because we'd had a season ticket the year before. That remains the only season I didn't have a season ticket. Because as a result of not getting a ticket for the final, my dad didn't want to make the same mistake again. So we had season tickets.
Forevermore.
And I've continued that into adult life. I don't know if you can remember, but the system, what they had was, obviously season ticket holders got one.
Yeah.
Now, those were in the days where, like, I don't know how many season tickets were had, but nothing like the amount you get now.
Yeah.
It was only select few who seemed to have the season tickets.
Well, I'm looking at the attendances for the cup matches, and West Ham at home was 25,000, Chelsea at home was 26,000. So, you know, the season tickets would have been 18 probably at the most.
I don't even think it would have been that high.
Around that time, sort of league attendance, you'd really like to put 14.
Although we only got 15,000 in for the third round against Port Vale, so perhaps not.
I reckon a season ticket might be like more like 8,000.
When did the gold card come in? Do you remember the gold card?
The gold card was there since I can remember.
Was
you remember. So you were a season ticket, or the next thing was to be a member. And what that did was you were only allowed in certain ends. So like the main stand paddock, which is where all the chanters used to go.
Right.
You had to have a gold card to get in there. You did initially have to have one again, the full end as well, but they relaxed on that, I think. The system to get a final for the final, what we played, because we were in this cup run, we had a massive backlog of fixtures.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we played Ipswich on a Tuesday night, and we played Plymouth at home on a Thursday night. And they said you need to attend both of those games.
When you
go in the same stand, because depending on where in the stand, what turnstile you go in, you will get a different colour voucher.
Right.
And you need those two vouchers, and then the colours of the vouchers will get drawn out. And Sunderland beat Ipswich 3-0, I remember. This is like me, I'm not confident in this, I haven't even researched this, I just remember it. We stuffed Ipswich 3-0, it was pouring down with rain, and then we lost at home to Plymouth, who were bottom of the league, on the Thursday 1-0.
I'm looking, you're absolutely correct.
I remember it clearly, and Peter Shilton was a player manager for Plymouth, and he was getting lots of stick. I think he had an affair with a girl called Tina or something.
Yeah, that was a regular thing. That went on for years. And shouting Tina at Peter Shilton.
Yeah, so they were doing that, but the biggest one, nil. And I remember I got a purple voucher, and then, obviously, because I've told you, it didn't get drawn out.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was a conspiracy theory at the time. Of course there is.
Imagine if there'd been social media.
Football fans having a conspiracy theory. Well, about something.
I went in the full end. And I believe most of the people in the full end, the vouchers they give, they didn't get drawn out. And there was a theory that they didn't want people full from the full end.
Type people.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Now, I don't know how true that was because I was only 11.
Yeah.
But that was definitely something I remember my family saying and people saying.
Yeah, that is a bit odd to make you go on the same stand, because surely the likelihood is you're going to be, half the people are going to be eliminated straight away. If you go on the same stand.
This is my memory from being 11-year-old. So some of them are sketchy, but I remember like getting two purple vouchers, and then the purple didn't come out.
Can you remember what colour was drawn?
No, it wasn't bloody purple and all that.
That's curious.
I was fuming, absolutely fuming. And the day of the cup final as well. That was when, do you know when they used to do the massive show on the telly?
BBC, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Started 9 o'clock.
It was class. Yeah. I mean that. Like, you know, Malcolm touches on it on the show, and it's probably one of the reasons why he got, you know, had the job for so long. I mean, he was caretaker manager for, how many months?
Well, he only got full time, like 2 weeks before the final.
Yeah,
prove yourself, mate. Go on.
Exactly.
get us the final, you can have the job.
And it was, like, at the time, you know, obviously, there's a lot of football on television now, and there's a lot of competitions, and you know, it's all about things like the Champions League and the Premier League. But you know, that the fact that it was an event, wasn't it, the FA Cup final, and you know, obviously I wasn't, remember the first FA Cup final I was really interested in, I think it was probably the 94, I think, did Liverpool play
94, Chelsea lost to Man United 4-0.
Yeah. So that was the first one I really remember. Actually, no, the Sheffield Arsenal.
That game for very
was Sheffield Arsenal 93?
Yes.
Yeah, so it was that one. So I remember the Sheffield Arsenal one because it went to a replay, didn't
That's
it?
That's right, it did, yeah.
But it was like on the day, it was the thing. It was like you got up in the morning, it was like 8:45.
Yeah.
They'd be at Wembley, it'd be like Des Lions at Wembley, and all day you had like
a
programme.
By then, 93, live football was a regular thing, but when I was younger, my first cup final I remember was 1979 Arsenal Man United. The only live matches you got in a season was the FA Cup final and the European Cup final.
Didn't Alan Sunderland score in that final?
Alan Sunderland scored twice in the last few minutes.
There you go.
My memory of that coverage of the telly of the cup thing, on a Saturday morning I used to go to Grindon Boys Club, and I remember that we were in the middle of a game of football in the five-side hall, and they just stopped dead because somebody opened the door and said, "We're on."
Right.
And it was our turn on the telly where I showed you our route to the final.
Right.
So everybody just like vacated the hall and ran out as fast as they could into like the common room and just crowded around this little telly and watched us just the run from Port Vale to Oxford to West Ham to Chelsea to Norwich all the way to the final.
So you know when you're talking about watching the pub, I mean, did they have like like you get screens now, this is going to sound like stupid. I wouldn't assume, because I mean, even in the vaults now,
it would have been
like
big plasmas.
The telly above the door, wouldn't it be a plasma in 1992?
That's what I'm saying, it would have been a big
exactly. Plasma. It would be a big back, a few big back tellies like kicking around the room, surely.
I think that's probably what it was. There might have been maybe just two or three tellies, one either side of the bar, reasonably sized tellies, no, you know, massive screens or anything like that. And that was what you did. I'm trying to remember if the Ivy House had a big screen. The Ivy House might have had a big screen
above the fire at the back.
Yeah, it did. I don't know if that was then or not. I was down the other end. I watched it on, you know, a standard size telly. I was down the end where the gents' toilets, the pool table was.
It's just weird to think of it now when you go in any pub, there's like 10 tellies across the bar while you're waiting for the bar, you know? And like get a drink and there's big screens everywhere.
Yeah.
And you think about
screens and toilets in some pubs.
How different.
I remember watching the Germany 1 England 5 game in 2001. We were having a weekend away in Blackpool for somebody's
classic
birthday. I was 20-year-old, Gareth, it's fine.
I bet he was singing German Bombers all up and down the streets of Blackpool.
So when Emil Heskey scored the fifth, I was on the toilet, and that was quite an interesting scene. If somebody just walked into the toilet,
did you have an upset stomach?
No. I was standing up, number one, but there were screens in front on the urinals.
All right, nice.
So you were standing there, and everybody watched that fifth goal, and then started jumping about and in the air. So if you can imagine that image.
Midway.
Strange blokes jumping about midway.
Kicking an FA Cup final theme and a Blackpool theme. I watched that West Ham Liverpool Cup final 2006, I think.
Oh, the Gerrard.
The Gerrard one, yeah. I watched that in a Wetherspoons in Blackpool because I was going to say Radiohead that night, Blackpool, but that's another story. And after the Cup final, I played pool against a Liverpool fan who took his false teeth out and put them on the side of the pool table because he said it made him play better. He was only about mid-20s, wasn't an old fella, and he was so drunk that he had no recollection that his team had won the FA Cup an hour beforehand. Well, I was trying to talk to him about it, and he was like, "What are you talking about? You've won the FA Cup, mate." What? Eh? What?
I'll be in that still if you like. Yeah.
What, when we've won the FA Cup?
No.
I don't remember that. Regular I've never nights, been in that time. I wish I was in that state.
Some Friday.
Yeah.
Did you ever, was there ever a part of anybody you think who thought they didn't want Crosby's manager, so we could do with going out of the cup now because we're concerned at the league position, or were people just so happy for him and getting swept away with what was happening?
I don't remember the league thing being that much of a feeling like a crisis.
It's like a sideshow.
The form was bad, and I've been looking at the league positions throughout that season, and we were 21st for a couple of weeks in April, and then we were 18th and 19th, and we never dropped 22nd or below. Even though we had a bad bit of form towards the end, it picked up, and you know, we got out of it. But I think the cup run just overshadowed everything else, and some people would have took an FA Cup win and a relegation. I think quite
some people were surprised when because he got given the manager's job on a full time basis a game before the FA Cup final.
Yeah,
where the presumption people had was that he doesn't want him as a full time manager, but he's not gonna. You know, bring someone else in when he's got an FA Cup final, and he's going to let walk the lads out of Wembley, and then he's going to bring somebody else in. But then he appointed him the penultimate league game of the season. I think
there was probably a clamour from the fans for him to be given the job full time, because he took us all the way to Wembley, and I think that the prevailing mood of the fans was, well, again with that thing about him being a local lad, it was just, you know, you've got to give him the job full time. But he was only given a one-year contract. I think he was just given till the end of the 92-93 season. So that wasn't a vote of confidence at all. It was almost like saying, you're probably going to fail, but you'll get a reasonable payoff middle of next season, because this is what's going to happen. And that's what did happen, and I don't think anyone was surprised.
He does comment on that, so listen out for that. If I say to you, how do you associate Malcolm Crosby when it comes to transfers? What would jump at you? Can you think of anything?
Terry Butcher's
the one. So Terry Butcher, obviously,
who else did he buy? He bought Sean Cunnington as well, didn't he? I think
John Calhoun
as well
was a signing.
Terry Butcher. Did I speak about Butcher in the Dennis Smith one?
Possibly.
I never took the Terry Butcher at all. Butcher had this thing that he would do when we'd win a match, where he would go to each end of the ground and sort of raise his arms up and sort of get the crowd going and all this kind of thing. And I just always thought, you're after his job.
We discuss all this as well. But
does that come up in the interview? Does it? Yeah.
Because Terry Butcher had been retired
He'd been player manager at Coventry, and he hadn't played. He re-registered as a player. He had kind of 2 years of not playing. He'd lost his job at Coventry, and then he came back as a player. And my God, watching him trying to turn... It's like watching an oil tanker try to turn around sometimes. It wasn't very mobile. He wasn't quick. He had it upstairs. You know, he knew positioning wise, he knew where to be and all that kind of stuff. So that got him through. But yeah, he was always kind of rallying the crowd and everything. And I always remember thinking, you know, Crosby's not long for this job, and you're putting yourself in the frame for it.
My dad said similar stuff as well.
Yeah.
He brought in John Calhoun, we said. John Byrne sold. Now, he said John Byrne wanted to leave.
Right.
But, you know, John Byrne went to Millwall, where Calhoun came from, for less money than we paid for Calhoun. How do you remember John Calhoun?
Very vaguely. That's all I've got.
For a reason, I think. I'm not sure he ever scored for us. Or he might have scored one, and that was it.
I mean, I was racking my brains trying to think of who we did sign in that.
What about the biggest story? Now, in hindsight, and because of the way the story goes, Butcher was the big signing, because he signed his replacement, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a huge bit of transfer news that summer with an outgoing player. Can remember who
Bracewell went to Newcastle, didn't he?
Yeah.
Was that over a contract renegotiation or something
Bracewell
like that?
Bracewell wanted a 2-year contract, and we wouldn't give him one, and then Newcastle bought him.
And how many years did he play for Newcastle?
He played in the Premier League, certainly,
and
after
then
that.
He came back to us.
In the Premier League again,
95, you know, he came back to us.
Maybe that 2-year deal might have been a good idea, but...
What was that like at the time? I can remember, I had a poster of Bracewell in my room, not because I was like his biggest fan or anything, like far from it, but it was because when I used to buy like Match magazines or 90 Minutes or Shoot or whatever, it wasn't often a Sunderland player would be in there. So if there was one in there, I would cut it out and put it on my bedroom wall.
Yeah.
And Paul Bracewell was one. I remember just a face in the poster and just writing like scum and traitor on his face and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, really. I mean, that's a childish reaction there.
I was 11.
Yeah. Exactly, you were 11. But
this was last season when he was recording.
Yeah. No, I think that was probably what everybody thought. And then that season was the one that Newcastle romped to the Championship, the second division, and we were down struggling.
I mean,
struggling badly under Martin Crosby.
Is it 10-year-11-year-old lad? I remember I was just getting into football sort of 93. I'd gone to a few games with my dad and that, but I used to hate it. Given the situation, it's pretty understandable, but I remember at school, it was like, I went to school near Hickman, like Shiny Row.
Yep.
So it was like split. So obviously people are picking their teams, and it was like there's about three Sunderland fans in the class, and the rest of them were all Newcastle fans.
That's funny, because I went to Shiny Row school as well a few years before. I left Shiny Row Comprehensive in 1988, and it was kind of 50-50 right. then. So obviously, glory hunters, yeah. let's say, in Shiny Row, all migrated towards the Magpies.
Absolutely.
When it all got a bit tasty. Yeah, I remember, that sounds about right, to be honest.
I remember being out on a school trip once, and it was my mate, actually, I was with during the 1992 FA Cup final, who was a Newcastle fan in Dickens Play area. He brought his Newcastle scarf to school, and it was like during this, like, we're on a school trip, and they were all marching down the street in Shiny Row, like singing Newcastle songs, yeah. waving this like, thing. And I was like, there was like three Sunderland fans in the class, and I was one of them. But it was like, I remember his mum was a Sunderland, well, I don't think she supported football, but she was like, oh, should support all the North East teams. His dad was like a dyed-in-the-wool mag. And like, but outside their house, they had like all the. Like red and white, right. like ticker tape and that all over the fence. So, I wouldn't allow it. If it was like Newcastle and Jane was like, oh, yeah, we're going to support the teams in the North East, I'd be like, that's it. Get out. It's over.
There was a parade, actually, when we lost the cup final.
Yeah. What a Sunderland, so Sunderland thing.
Well, they got on the open top bus and
booked, wasn't it?
And. Drove down road and stuff.
It was very well attended as well, because that was it. There was a heroic element to it with because it was only 19 years after 73, so that was still fresh in people's memories. You know, it still is now today, to be honest. And until we win another trophy, it always will be. But it was shades of 73 again, echoes of it, and all that kind of thing. So people really bought into it because. That was our cultural touchstone, if you like, was winning that cup in 73.
It wasn't that long.
I was so devastated. Honestly,
it wasn't that long after though. 73 was it either?
Exactly. And you know, the first half of that cup final and all, we did all right.
Yeah.
John Byrne had that chance from about 6 yards out, and if he put that away, we could have gone on and won that. But then a different game second half. Liverpool came out and scored in about 2 minutes of the second half, and then that was it really. And we never got back into it.
Good goal, the Thomas goal. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was struggling for form at the time, which is another very Sunderland thing.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And it kind of just petered out for him after that, didn't it? He was dismissed in February, 1st of February, I think, 2nd of February.
Well, that was it. We all knew he wasn't cut out to be the manager. He wasn't going to be the man that was going to take us back into the top flight and all that. And there was inevitability about it. And the fact that he wasn't given a lot of money to spend, and he brought in Terry Butcher, and I don't know what was going on behind the scenes, but I have my opinions about Terry Butcher at the time.
It'll be touched upon in the
forward to hearing that, actually, because I wonder if that ties in with what...
How Terry Butcher ended up with the club. Right. Something to do with the appointment of a member of the coaching staff.
Bobby Ferguson, was it?
So, yeah, he talks about that.
Okay, that's going to be a good listen, then.
Yeah.
And you remember the cup final song? Because that was a thing as well.
Did you sell? How many did you sell?
Ain't no stopping us now, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
We'll go out of that, actually. We'll drop it.
Will we? You have to find it.
I actually listened. I found it.
I found it.
It's on iTunes.
I've got the 7-inch in the house, lads. I could have brought it
well,
down.
Well, I was disappointed with that because...
That was crap, wasn't it?
Well, I remember that they covered that, but I couldn't... And then I listened to it the other day on iTunes, and it's just... They only play that line over and over again.
Yeah.
And there's no verses or anything.
Yeah.
And it's very like the music, you know, like the keyboard from New Order, the 1990 World Cup song.
Yeah, World Emotion, yeah.
Yeah, I'm also... you're almost expecting after a little bit of an instrumental, like John Barnes to come on.
Yeah.
You've got to hold and give. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like it just
sounds
like...
It'll be Benno. We've got to hold and, shall we say, give.
But you...
We'll do our best!
Overriding memories then of Malcolm Crosby, Andy?
It's just that thing, the right man at the right time for a certain event in the club's history. And like I just said before, everyone knew he wasn't cut out to be a long-term manager. He wasn't going to take us back to the heights. Well, I'd say the heights we'd enjoyed. We hadn't really enjoyed that many heights the last few years.
But we'd had a good bounce after going to the third division, when found ourselves back in the top flight within 4 years.
That was the thing. There was, he wasn't Dennis Smith. you know, Dennis Smith did brilliantly to get us up there, and Martin Crosby wasn't Dennis Smith, and everyone knew that. It felt like it was, well, we were entering a period where we were just drifting aimlessly and kind of slowly sinking as well. There was not a lot of money to spend on the team. There was a lot of misery. I mean, when Butcher became the manager after that, it got even worse. But Crosby's a footnote in the history of the club, but a good one, you know, because it got us to Wembley, and that has not been all often. So thanks, Martin.
Of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.